Cy Winstanley, welcome to Roots Radio.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey, thanks for coming over on a Saturday.
No worries.
Been waiting for new music from Tattletale Saints for a while. I'm glad it's here. And before we get into some background, just tell me what came together to make this the right thing, the right time? Like, why now? Why this?
Oh, well, we have been, myself and Vanessa, my bandmate, are both from New Zealand. We've been living in the States for 6 years now, and we've been doing the Tattletale Saints thing on and off, but we also are both instrumentalists for different people, and we love our jobs playing with different people, but I think we just got time to do our own passion thing, and we'd the last release that we did was 2 years ago, I think, or maybe 2.5, 3 years ago. But we tour New Zealand every year, and we love to tour new music, and we love to record new music.
And that is about to happen. You are about to do that tour.
Yeah.
On Monday, you leave for the long flight.
Yeah. And it's been booked for, you know, it's been in the works for almost a year now. But we were kind of drip feeding some of these songs. We recorded the first of them almost a year ago, actually, because we didn't have the full album's worth, but we wanted to release something. So we recorded them, released them. That's Bobby, Wheeler to Learn to Dance, and Honest Work. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we just kind of grabbed the rest of them over the course of a year. And there's no real reason why we did it, per se. It's just, it just felt like time to release something new, and I had new songs.
There you go.
And we have such great friends here that we love to play with, and they were around.
That's key,
and,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a great thing about having been here for a while and having played all these different gigs with different people, that now we have a great network of players who we love their playing, but we also love them as humans, and that kind of that medley of things makes a very harmonious recording experience, which is what we are all about.
Nice. Well, you and Vanessa have such an interesting story and beginning with New Zealand, which is just an interesting country and so far away. And yet Americans and Westerners relate to it. I think there's a strong country alliance. There's a strong sense of recognizing the culture, and and it's a place of legendary beauty that people go as tourists from here. You know, for some it's a life goal to get there. And the good old Lord of the Rings didn't hurt at all, or maybe it did in the eyes of New Zealanders. Like, oh God, Peter Jackson, why did you give us away? But I don't know about that. Give folks your sort of take on that country and what you like to think you've brought from there to your Nashville time and experience.
Cool. Well, I mean, New Zealand is my home. Well, I mean, America's my home at the moment, but I was born in New Zealand, and I love it very, very much. Moved away predominantly because there's just more opportunities for music in the States. New Zealand has actually got a really great creative community, and there's some amazing bands. The population is like 4 or 5 million, I think, now. So it's just not as it's just not a big place, and it's very the communities are very disparate. So touring wise, it's not a practical place to tour. So that's why we moved over here. But New Zealand,
and it's as big as what? Is it as big as, say, California?
Like
north to south? Do you have can you put it in perspective,
you know,
for folks?
I don't really. I think that it's like as wide. It's as vertically high as Tennessee is wide, I think. But driving through New Zealand, there is this huge vein of mountains down the center of the South Island. There's two islands, the South Island and the North Island. Not very inventively named, but it is what it is. And the South Island is this big range that runs through it, and the North Island as well has got various volcanic and otherwise mountains. So driving through New Zealand takes a long, long time, and the roads, the highways are not as like, they're pretty much just single lane roads or one lane going each way. So driving in New Zealand, though the distances are not ginormous, getting around the passes and everything is a mission. But it's a very beautiful place. It's I love the way it works socially over there. I love the incumbent government at the moment. I love how in touch with nature New Zealand is, and that's one of its huge trading points, I think, and that's a lot of the appeal to foreigners to go to New Zealand, because it's such a beautiful, lush, otherworldly place. And it is very true. It's very easy wherever you are to get deep outside, and I have been a long distance runner for a long, long time. And for me, running in New Zealand is just, oh, it's just amazing, because pretty much no matter where you are, you can get deep into the bush pretty quickly.
Right.
And I've had some epic runs in the States as well.
Yeah, sure.
But you know, it's often harder to get to those places to start the run. But
sounds pretty grand.
It's grand.
Did the music you had access to as a younger person and got interested in songwriting, in the sort of root side of music, what was available to you? What did you hear? What was the culture like that said tapping into, you know, music from the American South or indigenous music from where you are?
There's a lot of Irish music in New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of what got me into that folky vein of playing. I had a gig at an Irish bar, which was largely just kind of pop and rock covers, but we'd also play some trad tunes. And we were playing those tunes. I was playing with a mandolin player, and actually an American guy came in, and he was a rep for this big Borders. I don't know if it's still around, but the CD store Borders came in, and he was like, have you guys heard Olden in the Way, this classic bluegrass album? And and then he gave us that, and he gave us some Tony Rice album, and
hey.
And that kind of got us into the bluegrass thing.
Cool.
And my friends and I really, really took to that, and then we started singing There's More Pretty Girls Than One,
yeah,
and a bunch of those kind of classic tunes. And that's how I got into it, really, just from that one guy that came to this Irish pub, this bloody boozy Irish pub that I was playing in. He just came into that pub, and that's what got into it. But New Zealand has got a good songwriting tradition.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of songs, a lot of great poets as well that write about, in a very lyrical way, about the land and about New Zealand historical things. So the tradition of songwriting is rich in New Zealand. And it's kind of similar to the American tradition, I guess. But
And your guitar playing is pretty darn advanced, and you seem to really get into it. When I first saw you, I was struck by what you were doing on the guitar, whether it was, you know, you're not in the way of lots of leads, but just the way of really tasteful and inventive playing with the music and, you know, really selective and interesting stuff. And your counterpart, Vanessa, is apparently jazz trained as a bass player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So give me a little sense of the background of what the musical side of this act, of this band.
Yeah. Well, we both came from a jazz background, actually. Yeah. In fact, we met in a jazz big band when we were 15, 16 years old.
Oh, I see.
So we were playing in this swing big band, and then I actually got carpal tunnel in my hands, which meant I had to stop playing guitar.
As a young person?
As a young person, yeah. Oh. I have a very obsessive personality with particular things, and I was just going just a little too hard on the old guitar practice, so my hands crapped out. So we started out as jazz musicians, and then I stopped playing jazz guitar. She kept playing jazz bass, and like I said, that kind of bluegrass guy opened my mind to that kind of stuff. And I describe my guitar playing, I'm kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none, really. I mean, I can hang with the bluegrass thing, and I can hang with the jazz thingy, but you know, it's like, you know, don't get your hopes up. I shouldn't be so depreciating about my own playing, but
is playing your own original music in this duo like the ultimate expression of what you've always wanted to do as a musician?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And we've done, this album is more on the acoustic side of things. So the first album that we did was produced by Tim O'Brien. That was our first introduction to Nashville. We had a connection to him through a friend, and we spoke to him, and he suggested we come over and record. So that one was just a duo, and there were a couple of tracks with him playing mandolin and fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next album was more of an electric thing, which we both love doing as well. And I play a lot of electric guitar for different people, and that was a nice little change to electrify things. And then we've come back with this album to the more acoustic thing, but with a fuller sounding band with drums and with some keys and things.
Right.
So I don't know which iteration is my favorite. I love playing acoustic instruments, but I also love playing electric instruments. So it's all good. But yeah.
Well, I love that Vanessa's bass playing is so pronounced and an important part of the sound, whether it's fleshed out or stripped down.
Yeah.
She's really good.
Oh, yeah, she's a beast.
Tell folks, since she couldn't be here today, Tell us about her.
Well, Vanessa McGowan is my best friend, and I've known her for a long time, and she has actually been in Puerto Rico for 10 days, so she's just come back, and now she's going to bloody New Zealand on Monday, so she's a lady of leisure at the moment, but amazing bass player, great singer, just a very diverse musician. She plays bass at the moment for Brandy Clark and Sugarland and various other people. But then, like myself, we come together and we have our little Tattletale Saints project, and that's our passion thing.
Cool. Between New Zealand and Nashville was London for a time, right?
Yep, yep.
How long a stretch was that for you guys as working musicians?
That was, I was living in London for 7 years. I'm 37 now, and I moved there. I've got British citizenship from my parents. I'm first generation New Zealand, like many New Zealanders my age. First or second generation New Zealand. So I had the citizenship. So I went over to England when I was 20 something, mm-hmm. and stayed there and mostly did jazz stuff, and played guitar for some different people, and then moved back to New Zealand, then moved here.
And how did Nashville call to you guys?
Well, so Rachel Bayman, Christian Sudermeyer are two of my best friends.
Great fiddlers in 10 String Symphony, yep. and many other pursuits.
Exactly, yeah. So 10 String Symphony, and Rachel Bayman has got her own project, which I've been playing guitar for a while. So they came over to Australia. Well, they came over to New Zealand, actually, and booked a tour, but they didn't have a bass player. So they called up Vanessa through a connection, and she ended up doing that tour. And we just had a great hang with them, and they kind of introduced us to Nashville, really. I mean, obviously, we knew of Nashville, but we didn't really think about it. But they kind of opened our eyes to that, and then we got in touch with Tim O'Brien, and he said, why don't you come over and record over here? Mm-hmm. So we did. We came over for a month in 2013 or something, yeah. 2012 maybe, I can't remember. And we just had an awesome time, and we had both lived in big cities before, so we didn't really fancy moving to Los Angeles or New York or anything like that, because we'd kind of done the big city thing in London. And Nashville just seems so manageable in terms of getting around. It was cheapish to live. There was a great community of musicians, and it just seemed like a no-brainer. The reasons why pretty much everyone moves to Nashville, like, yeah. we just spoke to us like 8 years ago, and here we are.
And if Tim O'Brien is your entree, then you're like, okay, we've been accepted into the fold right away. Like, that's
well,
high,
yeah,
that's
high, I
mean, cotton.
I don't know if we were accepted straight away, but he was definitely a good foot in the door, mm-hmm. for us. And I'll see him in a week. I know he's in New Zealand right now.
Oh, how about that?
He's playing the Auckland Folk Festival next week, and we are too.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's going to be cool to see him. And I bumped into him. We played an Australian festival last year, and he was there as well. And yeah, he's a great dude.
That's fantastic. So on Dancing Under the Dogwoods, the title track, opening and title track, would suggest that you feel quite at home in the American South, because dogwoods are something that, I mean, I had dogwood outside my window growing up in North Carolina, and uh-huh. it's just, and then you've got the Cajun feel to the tune, and it just sounds like a celebration of Southern, all that's good about the Southern culture.
Yeah, that was the first song that I wrote in the States, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Within 4 months of living here, that song just kind of popped out, and then we'd play it. We had an Australian tour afterwards, and I'd introduce it as this song about this American tree, and then they'll be like, oh, we've actually got dogwood trees in Australia. And dogwood tree seems to be a tree which is actually all around the world. So I didn't know that in the beginning, but anyway, yeah. So it's a song. There's actually a bit of sexual innuendo in there in that song.
Okay.
If you listen closely, some of the references are to dancing under the tree in the physical sense of the word, but there are also other manners of dance that one can do under a tree. So that's what that song's about, and that's a super fun one to play.
Nice. Well, it kicks off with a very nice feeling, though anybody that's expecting the rest of the record to have a Cajun feel, then it takes, not there. But
there is one other track on there, that Bobby, Where Did You Learn to Dance song. That was that's a Cajun song as well. More or less, I was in Texas, in Austin, at the White Horse, that famous honky tonk, and watching a Cajun band play there. And I'd heard this story about my friend who's a blind, learning to two-step dance in this bar, and kind of started humming this tune, and Bobby, Where Did You Learn to Dance, popped out.
Well, that's nice. I've got a nice backstory in that one.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You put out a single on the song D-I-N-K, Double, which just stands for Double Income, No Kids, and it took me a second to realize that you were like telling this sort of profile of, what is kind of an issue song in a way.
Yeah.
Where did it come from, and then you've been playing it and it was released. Stirred up any conversation?
Yeah. I mean, I've had some very positive responses from people that are proud dinks. And that song was inspired by Vanessa mostly, and her boyfriend Jake are proud dinks. Mm-hmm. It's double income, no kids. And I think it's just a life choice that is very unconventional and often kind of looked down upon, I guess, because it defies convention and what our path is. But I think it's a very legitimate choice if you want to. And
it's almost more interesting from the point of view of like the story of how people justify that to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
That this is something that has to be sort of discussed and argued over or defended, or, you know, can lead to great conflict.
It really can, yeah.
That's more where the conflict is than in some sort of social stigma, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty interesting. Although I guess there's people who are really up in arms about the fact that our fertility rates are falling in America and the West, and that this is a giant crisis. I'm like, what?
I don't know. It seems like the population is just swelling out of control.
I feel like there's kind of people too.
I think dinks are...
You cover ABBA here. How long have you guys been playing Dancing Queen?
Well, we did that one. We learned that one because there was a TV show that we played in New Zealand, and they wanted us to do a cover of a song, and then they would change the lyrics to it. So we learned that song for the option for that show, but they ended up using another song. But we just it's just a beautiful kind of nostalgic, kind of melancholic song, and I think when you slow it down, it's a very, the lyric is so beautiful and so nostalgic, and we kept on playing it and it really resonated with people, and it's kind of a nice slow reveal as well when you play it, because the song doesn't, most people don't really recognize the song when it doesn't have the disco stuff that people recognize. They don't really recognize that you're playing it until you get to the chorus.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, oh, what is that? I think I know that. Oh, it's Dancing Queen.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So it's super fun.
Yeah. You actually pull the lyrics to the foreground. And I think I believe that Robbie Fulks also recorded that. So I think it may not be the first rootsy cover of this song, but I know he does ABBA all the time. I'm pretty sure he's cut Dancing Queen. And the last song on the project is Here at Last. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that one we chose to put at the very end of the record because we thought it was like a coming back to where we started from as Tattletale Saints, which was as a duo. The record that we recorded with Tim O'Brien called How Red Is the Blood was just as a duo predominantly. So that was a nice coming around to that. And that song is kind of like an optimistic imagining of what it would feel like when something really comes to fruition, something that you've been working at for a long time. And originally I thought of things like if racial equality was to ever actually to happen, or women's equality, or like huge social things like that. So you can think about it on the macro like that, or it can just be about some personal goal or personal growth thing that you've been working on, and when it finally comes to fruition, it's here at last. So you can take it however you want. It doesn't explicitly refer to the racial or those kind of things, but it's just like what it would feel like to imagine when these things actually happen, something that you've been working on and fighting for and dying for, and when it finally comes to be, it just must be mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's also a reminder to stop and be grateful for those humps that we have crossed over, that we sort of, it's background noise, it's just reality, we take it for granted, but we had to fight for it at some point.
Yeah, totally.
Right on. Well, to wrap up, and you looking at the year ahead, you and Vanessa's thing has been so important here in Nashville. I've really loved it. But you also have been just so indie and I think under the radar for the Americana audience. And yeah. I was excited to have a chance to, sort of get you on this, just tell your story and see if you guys hope that this record or any plans for the coming years, because as you said, you've got a tension between making the living with the side as side musicians, which is always more reliable. And,
yeah.
And what are your hopes and maybe plans?
Well, we've got this tour coming up in New Zealand, which is very satisfying for us to go and do
and
that.
And let's be clear to folks, you have won some major awards in New Zealand and you're very well known there.
Yeah, we've got a good following in New Zealand. We won the Album of the Year, the New Zealand Music Award for that. And we're in the final throes of this final round of this big songwriting thing in New Zealand, which was also cool too. So our goals with it, I guess, are just to have a successful tour. And we both love playing guitar for guitar and bass for different people. So I think we are both really enjoying the diversity in our career that we have this original project that we're doing, but we also have all these other things that we do. We would love to do some more touring in the States, but I think we're just being a little more selective with it, and we're trying to put it in to try just trying to work it in with our other side player touring things, and not have it be our full thing. But I don't really know, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Come what may with it. We're just looking at the short term with this tour in New Zealand, and hoping that some people dig the record and. We've got a lot of work. We've both got very full schedules this year with our side player work. So it's a lot to fit around that kind of stuff.
And tell me who you go out with mostly these days.
Well, I've been working with Rachel Bayman for the last couple of years, and I've done some stuff with Peter Bradley Adams recently. And I've actually got a new gig, which I'm not at liberty to talk about that yet, but that's going to be a big gig for me this year. Mm-hmm. Vanessa has been working with the country band Sugarland and with Brandy Clark. And we both also play with various kind of smaller artists around town. And I'm really enjoying playing these jazz gigs in town. I've been playing at a couple of kind of jazz clubs in town, and that's singing that and playing that has been really, really enjoyable for me. And it kind of fills the gap when I'm on the road and then I come home and I've actually got something to, some music to perform when I'm at home as well.
Cool.
And I kind of like being tucked away in the corner of the room and just jamming along with on these beautiful American songbook standards. So
right on.
Yeah.
Si, thanks for the time. Congratulations on the record, and good luck to y'all.
Thank you. Appreciate it.